mothers.
And others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music. A chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry. Artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hello, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Creative industries are not just one thing. So the best creative industry workers never are just doing one thing. Enter Fiona Allen, a music mother and other who seems to never be idle. She's a creative project manager, amongst other things, working across a variety of music and arts platforms, including arts and music festivals, live music venues, community radio and events. She's currently based in Victoria in Australia, but she's also worked across the world, across event production, festival production, ticketing, box office, artist bookings, venues and radio, and TV too. Fiona's current email address has her as the office manager at 94.9 Main FM, but we know there's much more to her than just one label or one address. We're thrilled to have her with us to find out how she juggles all the things that she's juggling right now. Welcome and thanks for joining us, Fiona.
Hi. Thank you, guys.
Hi. Welcome.
I feel really tired listening to that description of myself. I was like, how do I?
So, look, there is so many things that we've seen on your LinkedIn profile, right? It's like a shopping list of so many different things from different countries, from different areas in the creative industries, and, of course, music is there predominantly as well. So with all of these different job titles, how do you actually see your place in the music industry? Where do you kind of fit with it all?
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking about that. I was thinking about place. And how, I guess, 25 years ago I would have thought of that as a physical concept, whereas now I tend to think of it as an abstract concept. It's a shifting place. When we're young, we all start off, working in a different space. I mean, I know that I started off working in a record store. You know, it was like my dream job. Although I'm not sure HMV Pitt Street, Sydney was my dream. But
That was place. A record store. I spent lots of time in there. We probably go way back.
Yeah.
We probably bonded over a Bros single or something, you know?
I don't know. It was Silverchair, like, was kind of my era.
Ah,
okay. And we were always slightly jealous of the people that worked at Virgin because for some reason we thought the Virgin Megastore was cooler than HMV. I have no idea why. Maybe it's because Jeff Buckley played there and not at ours.
It was the fancy building too, wasn't it? The Virgin one was down. Was that at your time and it was kind of down the bottom of George Street in the old bank?
Oh, my gosh. I can't remember. Pitt Street Mall I was on in HMV.
Yeah. But that's it. That's all we needed to know, right? The sooner you got down to the harbour, they're up themselves. We don't have to worry
90s.
About it.
Yes. Just say 90s. That's it. So I think my place has just changed and a lot of it changed as my personal circumstances changed. I've been really lucky to kind of identify in myself and then have some other people that could also identify that the skills that I learned working in a record store, then working for a record label were really transferable, and which is how I ended up working in television because I'd spent 10 years on the road touring and just the right person saw my resume at the BBC and thought, oh, well, this person can just work on location. Like, there's no, the skills of just production and being organised and logistics are the same. I still have cheat sheets. Which amp can replace which amp, which, speaker system's correct, which cameraman can do the job. But, so I guess, place is shifting.
So can I ask, and you mentioned working on television and stuff as well, there's two things we wanted to ask you about. One was about your time with merch and you were doing, how do you become a merch person? Was it the Green Man Festival you were working on? And it's a while ago.
Yeah. Actually, sort of by accident, which I think so many people that you speak to will probably say that, oh, I just fell into it by accident. I was living in London in 2004. I had just moved over there. I waited till I was 30 to do my around the world trip. A band that I used to work with when I was a label manager, a band called the John Spencer Blues Explosion, who were based in New York, were playing in London. And so I just got in touch with them and said, can I sell some T-shirts in return for like free gig? And 3 months later, I was traveling around Europe on a tour bus with them because I took my job as a merchandise person so seriously. Like I set up a job, I built a store every night and made beautiful signs, and I had like the T-shirt section and the record section, and I really like, I thought if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it like the best that it's ever been done for this band. Which was great because they just meant they took me all around the world for a couple of years.
That's incredible. And I guess that leans back to what you were saying too about those transferable skills, because the very best, you'd be the best person that can sell something at HMV, you'd be the best person that can, you know, do whatever it is you're doing. That's going to shine through, isn't it? People are going to respect that, you know, that just dedication.
I think so, because as I was touring, I realised that I didn't really want to sell merch forever, that it was fun and it was incredible way to see the world, especially, you know, as somebody like from who was born in Adelaide, all of a sudden I'm in Denmark one day and Norway the next, and I never, ever took that for granted. I was touring with an artist called Peaches, which
you're
could
just
probably
like throwing out these band names, and Liz and I are like swooning, you know, just chucking in John.
That's it. You dropped something on the floor there, Fiona. I think you dropped a little name there. Drop another one. We love
it. I've got a few more I can pick up.
Please
if you
do.
Like. But I guess, yeah, and honestly, the tour with Peaches could have its entire podcast of its own.
Yeah.
But maybe after midnight.
I was going to say, were you doing merch for that tour, did you say?
I was doing merch, but I was also kind of helping Peaches with costumes and just kind of as a bit of a PA. And towards the end of the tour, our tour manager got really ill and had pneumonia, so he just kind of subbed me in without telling anyone. And at that point I'd realised that I really wanted to try my hand at tour managing, and so I was really, really lucky to have a bunch of friends that kind of took me under their wing and taught me their skills and then kind of gave me their jobs when they moved on to something massive like Florence and the Machine or whatever.
Wow.
True story.
And I'm thinking about those merch stalls, and I'm wondering what kind of merch Peaches has, because I actually haven't seen a Peaches merch store before, but I'm wanting to know, would there be any kids or babies T-shirts at these merch stalls that you're in charge of?
Disappointingly for Peaches, no. And not with the John Spencer Blues Explosion, but when you mentioned Green Man Festival before, which is an incredible festival in Wales, and I did merch there for a couple of years, and the first thing I did was introduce baby and kids merch, because you just look around at the festival attendees and realise that it's essentially, well, it's us, you know, and my kid's 9 now, but at the time I didn't have a child, but there were plenty of kind of people that used to go to Glastonbury now going to Green Man with babies in slings, and I thought, oh, look, we could make some money here with some cute merch.
Yeah.
We had little T-shirts that said little folk, because all the grown-ups' T-shirts said folk.
Aww.
Floated my boat.
Hi, this is Coco from the Pogo Go Show, and you're listening to Music, Mothers and Others.
Well, that actually makes us think about how family life fits into your, you know, evolving career, you know. Obviously, running a family, you've mentioned your daughter. We've seen some amazing photos of you, in particular the photo of your baby at the time with Beth Ditto. How did that happen?
3 weeks after my daughter was born, which was in 2011, up until that point I had been working as a tour manager. I think I stopped when I was about 6 months pregnant because I had a few complications, and also my daughter's father was basically refusing to let me get on a plane to go to the other side of the world on tour. I was like, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. We were living in Wales at the time. And Beth Ditto's manager got in touch with me 3 weeks after my baby was born and asked, would I be interested in tour managing Beth's upcoming tour? My ex husband is a sound engineer, so he was like, package. And I was like, yeah, we're a package of three now. But we kind of came up with this solution where he took the tour on the road and I just worked from home because I was awake, you know, 21 hours a day anyway. And I think that was maybe the only show of the tour that I went to, and took my baby girl, who was 3.5 months old maybe, to London and to meet Beth Ditto. It was pretty amazing. Auntie Beth.
How did you find that juggle? And we've talked about it a lot on the show with different people, but we're always curious to know how people kind of – were you even thinking, I don't even think I can do this when I've got a baby? Or you think, I'm still the same person? Like, how did you – when that job offer comes after the reality of baby hits, what was your gut reaction? How did you get into it? Did you lean in? Did you have a bit of a pause? Were you just too sleep deprived to even think about it? What happened?
Can I say all of the above?
Sure.
Yeah, you can.
I think I burst into tears at first.
Yeah.
That was my initial reaction, like, oh, God, like, how amazing. And, you know, Beth's the most joyful, exuberant, generous person to work with, you know, an incredibly strong feminist. And I was like, oh, dream for me. But it was amazing how quickly we just said, well, we don't need to say no to this. Mm. And I think maybe if my daughter had been older, I probably would have said no, but I was in that beautiful kind of early days haze of just kind of, yeah, whatever, like, I'll just take her with me everywhere, it'll be fine, you know, I'm not sleeping, I can do this. And I did, like, I did do it. But, yeah, I think 6 months later I probably wouldn't have been able to do it. You know, when they're tiny, it is much easier. It's when they start getting mobile.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? And you don't know what you don't know when you're in that first little bubble yourself, do you?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because we had a lot of conversations about, like, life won't have to change. We can keep doing what we're doing. But I think, you know, being pregnant on tour made me realise, like, actually, you know, things are going to change and they're really going to change. And you mentioned leaning, and I'm just going to have to lean into that change and just kind of embrace it. I had an amazing touring career, and like I always had that. Nobody could erase that from my past. It's like an incredible experience that I still get to live in different ways, whether it's just through memories or just contacts and, you know, friends that I made on the road.
Mm.
You can't stay on the road forever as a parent. I mean, some people juggle it, but those people have nannies or somebody at home.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Annabelle Crabb says the wife problem? You really need to have
Everyone needs a wife?
Yes.
A wife? Maybe. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. My daughter's father, we're not together anymore, is a sound engineer. So we had like the double touring family. Which was really interesting because I think back now about the conversations we didn't have about who would stay at home. I think because of the way, you know, I was breastfeeding and I just never, ever considered going on tour again. But when my daughter was about 4, I think, I went on the road for 4 months doing a comedy tour, which was something that I had never considered doing. But the job offer came in and... Ellen's dad wasn't working, and so we could do it. So we swapped for 4 months, and it was so interesting because I could not wait to stop touring. But also I was really logistical about it. You know, I called her every night at 7 o'clock, and I sent her postcards, and I bought fancy dress outfits from small towns in Cornwall for book day. And, you know, I was still doing all that parenting while I was on the road. And when I got home, I realised that's one of the things that made me so exhausted was trying to do all of it, you know, and trying to do all of it perfectly.
It's interesting. Did you find when, because you're around musicians for so long before you became, who are away from their families, I assume, before you're, you know, a parenting person who's away from their family themselves, did you find that the musos you were with were doing the same thing if they had kids, or is it just not a thing? Like, is the cliche true? We're asking, is what goes on the road stays on the road, you know?
Yes and no. I know that's a cheats answer, but I was quite lucky to tour with older artists. my age, you know, I'm in my mid-40s now, and some of them would have been older than me when I started working with them. So artists like the Blues Explosion, where only one of them had a child as far as band goes, and their child was already starting high school, and they'd done the partying. When I was pregnant, I was working with LCD Sound System, and they're also a bit older, and the drummer Pat had a child, but everyone was in kind of serious relationships. And James Murphy, who is a father himself now but wasn't at the time, it was so clucky. Like, when I told everybody I was pregnant, I think they all burst into tears. Oh. You know, they were so proud and excited, and they supported me through my pregnancy like a family, like a touring family. And I had previously worked with Hot Chip, and one of them had a baby, and they brought their child on tour when I was pregnant and no one else knew I was. And I was so sick and so tired. And, you know, we were in New York, and I was constantly saying, oh, you know, I'll babysit. You guys go out, have a dinner. I'll stay home and babysit the baby. And they're sort of looking at me like, what? You
know. Something's up.
Yeah, a couple of months later, the penny dropped in a really massive way.
It's such an interesting juggle. Do you, you talked about, you know, obviously the life that you came into, but how did you, where did music start for you? It had to, was it before HMV? Were you a little kid hanging on to the rafts at HMV when you were younger? What was your, did you have a musical childhood?
My parents aren't musicians, but they love music. And I think we had the classic Beatles versus the Stones kind of drama in our house. My dad used to buy those KTEL record compilations, so you know, like best of the girl groups, you know, 60s kind of stuff. And he'd buy them for my mum for, you know, Christmas, and they totally, you know, weren't for her.
Well, it's better than like an appliance or something like that, right?
Yeah, that's true. Although she probably would have loved a chainsaw or a drill or something. She was like, that was her thing. And she's still much better with that kind of stuff than my dad. But so it was just at home, just playing records with the neighbours and always records. And then funny, you know, sitting in a radio station as I am now, we used to make all our own radio shows, like with the little cassette players and back and outs and, you know, these little 10-year-old kids saying, that was the Rolling Stones' Mother's Little Helper, you know, having no concept. And I think it just grew from there. Like, I struggled a bit fitting in high school, like all of us can probably freely admit now, but maybe didn't at the time. And, you know, when I found the kids that liked Depeche Mode and stuff like that, then I just kind of stuck with them.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. Once I started working in a record store and I progressed to working in a record label, it just kind of, you know, I'm very good at facilitating people's art. I'm really rubbish at art myself.
You know? Well, we think actually, Liz and I think that because of the different hats you've worn in the creative industries, and you know these amazing roles in the music industry as well, we think, and the fact that you're a parent, we think that you're pretty well positioned to have a perspective on how to make the music industry a more kid-friendly, family-friendly, parent-friendly space. And you know our podcasts, and you know we like to ask our guests these questions because we're trying to compile some kind of dream list about changes that could be made in the music industry, so that more people can participate in it, more people can go to shows, or more people can enter the music industry knowing that it's not a detrimental thing to have a child and be a working professional. So what kind of changes do you think you might be able to recommend?
I think there's so many levels to it. You know, on a practical level, just addressing the way freelance and contract people are paid, you know, and that's all over the world, every industry. It's not just music. But, you know, kind of building that parental leave. I was a freelancer when I had my child. I had 2 weeks statutory maternity pay from the British government, and the father of my child had none.
Yeah.
Because we were freelancers, so we didn't count. So for me, that was an important thing. And then, you know, in no way diminishing the role of a mother, because I'm a mother and therefore I am the most important.
We know. We're there.
We hear you.
You guys know. I have participated in a lot of panels and arranged a lot of panels about female musicians talking about mothering. And the conversation I always want to encourage people to have is, what about, is the fathers too? And I'm not saying, you know, we need to raise the men up, but we need to actually use the word parents mm-hmm. in the music industry. And more, we need to use it more. Without going into it too much, the lack of support that my daughter's father got really didn't help the way our relationship went.
Yeah.
You know, he had to go out on tour all the time, missed so many milestones because there was absolutely no understanding that maybe being around for your daughter's birthday was more important than, you know, a gig with 50 people in Brussels. It would be interesting now to revisit that with some of the management teams that he've worked with that have had children of their own since. And we talk quite often about how differently he finds it working with artists that have families of their own, and how, you know, he wishes that was kind of the case from the get-go. Visibility, just, you know, I take my child with me everywhere, and I started doing it as a point as well. So when people would say, this is no place for a child, it would either be, why not, or, well, let's make it one.
That's lovely. I really like that, because it's right, isn't it? It's when they say this is no place for a child, well, what kind of place shouldn't be welcome? Like, what kind of place is there an issue? Like, of course, an unaccompanied minor is a problem. There's pretty much nowhere where you want an unaccompanied minor. But if you're there as well and you've made that decision, why? What?
The world should be a place where children and families and people and parents can live. I mean, I know that there's, you know, restrictive things like alcohol licensing and, you know, those kinds of spaces where legally you're not allowed to have your kids. But, I mean, even a photo we've seen of you, you know, every day is take my kid to work day, right? You know, and I'm sure your daughter comes into the radio station, Main FM, all the time.
Yeah, she's been, we started co-hosting a show together last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she had more texts than when I did it on my own. Like, all people were texting in, like, encouraging her.
We should have asked her on. Look, if she wants to come back, if you guys want to come back.
She'll steal the show.
She'll steal the show. I love that.
You're listening to Music, Mothers and Others.
I did go through a period where I thought maybe I shouldn't tell people that I'm a mother. Because my first encounter of a touring mother was, I was working with a UK performer called Will Young, who was like the first winner of Pop Idol or one of those. I didn't know who he was. When I got an email from his management, I said to my friend, is that the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? So different from each other, honestly. Like, the production coordinator on that tour was probably in her mid-30s, and I didn't find out till I'd been working with her for 3 or 4 months that she had a 3-year-old at home. And she was petrified of telling anyone about her child because she was worried that they would fire her, or that they would think that she couldn't step up to the next level, or that, you know, she'd have to go and be a mother. But nobody ever asked that of, like, the guitarist who had 3 kids at home, and, you know, the production manager who had 4.
Were these people men, the guitarist and the production manager?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I remember just being absolutely shocked by that, and then having a little self-examination and thinking, I feel like I might have done the same thing. But because of her, and Vicky, wherever you are, thank you, I didn't. I thought, no way. Being a parent is nothing to be ashamed of. Why should I hide that? It's part of who I am. And actually, it's what makes me really good at my job these days.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? And to say too, I think you're right to include men, but also to include non-parents. Like, we're quite, you know, for me, it was a long time before I was a parent, I was really active in children's lives in my family. And, you know, the aunties, the aunties, the uncles, all of those people who are non-biological parents but are still part of the village, you know, they're just totally as important to be at a birthday party or to be available to help if somebody's sick or all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, we have often interviewed people who are based in cities, and I'm not sure if we've interviewed anyone who's based in a regional town. Is Castlemaine a town?
Yeah,
it's kind of like a
city.
No,
is it a city?
Yeah, I think it has to be like some particular population size before it gets called a city. But so tell us a bit about what is musical life there like in Castlemaine, and do kids get to go along to gigs there? What happens? Is it different?
I feel like living in Castlemaine, I see more bands now than I did when I was living in Wales for the last few years as a single parent. I think it's probably because I take my child along to some. Up until COVID hit, I was working at the Theatre Royal, which is a venue, a live music venue here in Castlemaine, and I was helping with the bookings and production. So, you know, I was lucky to just be able to take my daughter along to shows. Sometimes it was just sound check. Sometimes, you know, if it was something she was really into, Thelma Plum. She loves Thelma Plum.
That's work, right? Yeah.
And she shouted at me because I didn't take her to the Dyson Stringer Chloe gig. She was really angry. She wouldn't talk to me for like hours. No, look, Castlemaine's super lively, super, you know, it's probably slightly more family friendly than some of the city venues. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because we're a regional town, whether it's because it's quite a lot of people here that don't have family here. Like a lot of people have flocked to regional Victoria and left their babysitters behind.
And look,
since we've started opening up again post-COVID, a lot of the gigs are now in the afternoon, outdoors. So they are much more conducive to bring your kids along.
Mm-hmm. It's so that scheduling thing's so important, isn't it? Hey, I'm really aware of time, so you know that we just have one last question we like to ask people, which is the kids and I are listening to. If you don't mind finishing the sentence, what are you mentioned a little bit that your daughter loves Thelma Plum, but is there something in particular that you and the kids? It doesn't just have to be your daughter; it could be the others that you know that you acquire via the village there in Castlemaine. What are the kids and you listening to?
Well, my daughter is currently obsessed with the song "Only You" by Yaz. She's like, I'm hearing it two or three times a day, and she knows all the words. And it's only been 2 weeks since she discovered it, and that's been quite brilliant.
Do you mean Yaz, The Only Way Is Up, Yaz?
Yeah.
And she has a song called Only You.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
Yeah. That is so great. And was that how does a 10-year-old find Yaz?
That was interesting because we were watching a movie, some terrible Disney spin-off, and there's a TV program with Disney characters in it. Anyway, but there's a young romance and the 12 or 13-year-old boy plays this song to this girl that he likes. And Ellen, my daughter, just stopped in her tracks and, God, what is this? You know,
that's amazing.
And I'm really fortunate in that she has, for the most part, pretty excellent taste, and she's obsessed with Kate Bush, like loves Kate Bush, and started introducing Kate Bush to all her friends, which went down well with some of them, but not all, you know. She's obsessed with David Bowie, you know, she loves Hot Chip. Another song that I had written down to mention was that she introduced on the radio last week as well was Paris, Texas by Rai Kuda.
Wow.
And it really, she tells this beautiful story about how her music teacher at school, Desiree, shout out to Desiree, played it to them, and Ellen was lying on her back and she just said, I felt like I was lying on the floor of a desert temple.
Oh.
And I just thought, oh, God bless our music teachers, you know.
That's amazing.
That's so good. Well, I think we need to wrap it up a little bit, Liz, don't we?
Yeah, we've had so much of your time. Fiona, you're fabulous. Thank you so much.
We've loved it.
Thank you.
Music, Mothers and Others is written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt and edited by Nina Longfellow. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. Visit us on Facebook and Instagram to find out who our upcoming guests will be. See you next time.